for the benefit of those with flash photography.
It's podcast time. This podcast is called Dreamwork. I am called Colin Delady. In a moment, we'll be joined by my tag team partner. He is the man called Cheech. And we, together, are the tag team called To Infinity and Beyond. All right, enough of that. Each week here on Dreamwork, me and Cheech talk about something that we know and love very, very much, and that is the art of tag team wrestling. Not the art of wrestling, that is a completely different podcast. And this week we talk about possibly the most influential tag team of the last 10 years, and that would be the Young Bucks. We get into it a bit in the podcast, but just thinking more about it after we got done, man, studying their in-ring work is incredible, but when you really take a step back and look at just their overall influence, it's pretty wild. Like, Cheech goes into it, and we talk about it a bit. They had merchandise in Hot Topic when they were an independent wrestling tag team. It's crazy. It just shows, like, what you can possibly do. They run a promotion on television. They're like competing with the WWE, basically, you know, on their own. I mean, not on their own, not just the two of them, but them and Kenny and Cody, like, to go from where they came from and to be where they are, man, it's inspiring. It's impressive. It rules, you know. It's the first tag team on the podcast that me and Cheech have had the pleasure of wrestling as a team. We've wrestled individuals who we've spoken about, and we've wrestled teams that we've spoken about, but never me and Cheech together. So I feel it gave us a bit of a different perspective this week to discuss them, and it was a lot of fun discussing them. So let's get down to it. It's Nick Jackson, it's Matt Jackson, it's the Young Bucks. Yeah, yeah, it's Cheech.
Yes, indeed it is.
How you doing, pal?
I'm doing all right.
That's good. It is a Wednesday, which means it is AEW Dynamite night.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder how that might correlate to what we're talking about.
Yeah, I thought about that as we were rolling in. I was like, man, I'm going to go from watching a bunch of Young Bucks to probably watching more Young Bucks on my TV.
Well, it is glorious times. It is glorious time.
Yeah, so that's it. That's it. It's the Young Bucks. We're doing it. This is an ambitious grab, considering me and Cheech were on the road this weekend, so we're a little more crunched for time than usual to really study.
But luckily, I mean, it's a team we're very familiar with. You know what I mean? They're very much in the popular culture.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And this is the first tag team on the show that we as a team have wrestled, right?
Are you telling me we did not wrestle the Midnight Express?
I am telling you that.
Okay, that was only in my dreams. Only in my dreams. Okay.
Yeah, no, we've separately wrestled different parts of teams and teams specifically, but we have not together as a team wrestled any of the teams we've covered on DreamWork until this one right here, the Young Bucks, which we wrestled three times.
Yes, together. See, that's the other. Okay, you thought that fact. The odd fact I thought was that we've wrestled them together and with other people.
Yes, correct. Yeah, when I was looking at their cage match, I was like, oh, look at this. Young Bucks against Cheech and Cloudy HD net match.
Yep, we had that. We also ran into them in Chikara. Like, that was the curious thing I thought. I didn't actually think about that. Yeah, this is probably the first official team we've worked together. But because right, you've worked them with it was AR Fox one time in 2CW, and wasn't there someone else?
No, I worked them with Fox, and then we worked them in those two six-man tags.
Okay then. But kind of odd. But yeah, yes, once again, we are very familiar with this team.
Yeah, so while a little less time to cram matches and study, a little easier considering we know them on a bit of a deeper level, having wrestled them. So that kind of covers my preliminary thoughts. I thought, basically the best team going right now, super polarizing, and maybe a team we'd want to take a little more time to deep dive into some matches on. But as you said, being that we've worked them a handful of times and in all different like eras and whatnot, it's not as difficult as you might think.
Exactly. But I am okay. But so your preliminary thoughts were okay, you're just familiar with them? Because in my head, I kind of like what you said earlier. I thought it was a little bit of a daunting task, especially because I ended up putting like a framework on what I was going to watch of theirs. So it ended up being a little more laborious than I thought, but just slightly more.
Yeah, I had no plan going in. I just, yeah, I actually went off my usual routine, and I happened to watch or put on All Out. So I was like, "Well, looks like I'm starting with the Jurassic Express match."
I did the exact same thing.
So usually I started at the earliest I can find and work to the newest, but I went new right off the rip, and then I was like, "Maybe I just go opposite this time," and I said, "Nope. Nope, I'm not doing it. I will go back to the beginning."
But yeah, no, I thought it'd be a daunting task. It wasn't that bad. It was just because the parameters I put on it, I guess we'll get to it a little early, is that I wanted to see like their major league stuff. So like I didn't really delve into the indie stuff so much. It was more so like ROH, PWG, New Japan, AEW, things like that. But I don't want to get off that. I don't want let's not get there too quickly, because this is definitely a team with a list of accomplishments that we cannot skip over.
Yeah, and I wrote down like the main ones I feel, and we can quickly touch on some of the others, but even just like the big time, big boy main stuff is a lot.
I was going to say, I'm sure there are plenty of websites that named them, team of the year for many, many years, but we're probably only looking at the biggest of the big, which I agree we should.
Yes. So let's start off with some title reigns. They are three-time Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions.
Okay, yep. Sounds about right.
Four-time PWG Tag Team Champions.
Definitely sounds right.
Seven-time IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Champs.
That's just ridiculous.
Yep, I said seven. I said seven. In addition to that, they also were one-time straight up IWGP tag champs.
Wow, they did get the big boy ones. All right.
And a one-time AAA tag team champs.
Okay, yeah. I'd almost think maybe more, but I'm sure they probably had a decent reign because, dang, man, that's everywhere. But yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's literally everywhere. In addition to, they were at one time Chikara Campeones de Parejas, and they were, as we know, 2CW tag champs. And I think they were House of Glory twice. But not ju these are those were just the big ones. But their title accomplishments were like literally a mile long.
Oh, I could only imagine. I could only imagine. Because once again, they were just so dominant. They had gold everywhere they went.
All right, so in addition, they won the PWG DDT tournament in 2009, 2011, and 2013.
Jeez.
They won the New Japan Super Junior Tag Tournament in 2013.
Yep.
They were the Ring of Honor Tag Team of the Year in 2017.
Makes sense.
They were the PWI Tag Team of the Year in 2017 and 2018.
Yeah, they were crushing it. Keep going. I know there's more.
And they were the Wrestling Observer Tag Team of the Year from 2014 through 2018. That is five consecutive years that they were the Observer Tag Team of the Year.
Yeah, man. Yeah, they've been hot for a while.
And that led to the Observer naming them the Tag Team of the Decade.
Well, yeah, obviously, mathematically, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah. I said that they were the PWI Tag Team of the Year 2017 and 2018, but I should also mention that they were the runner up in 2019, 2015, 2016, 2014. They were like runner up every year that they didn't win the award.
Yeah. See, there you go. Team of the Decade, hands down.
Yeah. It's nuts. But it makes sense. It's not, you know, I'm reading all this just going, oh yeah, oh yeah, that's, oh yeah. Like when you stack it all up, it's a ton, but none of it unbelievable.
Yeah, no, the only hard part is where you have to compartmentalize and go, wait, how long were they in New Japan? Okay. How long were they in ROH? Yep, that makes sense. How long were they in PWG? Okay, yeah, that makes sense. The New Japan one's kind of crazy because, like, yeah, they were there for years, but, like, that's a lot of hot potato in those junior tag belts.
Seven.
Yeah, I know, seven.
And I didn't even mention they were never Openweight six-man champs and Ring of Honor six-man champs at separate times with separate people.
Yeah, but I bet you they don't have a lot of singles titles, so suck on that.
Not off the top of my head. I literally looked too, but I don't know. That, like, you know, that doesn't really – it didn't list any in the Wikipedia. They were also, I think it might have been 2018, they were 38 and 40 respectively on the PWI 500, which is pretty good for tag team wrestlers. Although, if you told me in one of those years, like, it's almost shocking that would be the highest they got.
Yeah, for as hot as they were, but still 30 and 34, you said, or whatever. Okay, whatever, in the top 40s, that's saying a lot, to be honest.
It is, but yeah, I don't know. When you consider how hot they were and how hot they were running, just because they're a tag team, they don't make the list as high as certain people when they easily had a much better year than probably, 90% of the people above them.
True, but I'm sure singles probably weighs real heavy.
Yeah, I agree. I just, it's surprising, not surprising. It's a lot. Their accomplishment section is a lot. It may be not since the Dudley Boys, I think, have we had an accomplishment section that runs like this.
Yeah, I'm sure it's very dense.
Yeah. So before we get into matches we watched, you said you had a little bit of like a plan in mind. I didn't have a plan in mind, but they have so much content from basically every year since like 2008. So I just tried to get a little bit from every era, you know?
Yeah, I probably should have tried that a little bit more. Because that's the problem. I didn't want to go necessarily too far back because, they weren't, like I said, I wanted to keep into the big stuff of the PWGs, the Ring of Honors, New Japan stuff, AEW stuff. Just because, I don't know, maybe I just overthought. I was like, yeah, there's a million and one of them, like, on this random indie show and that random indie show. And, like, I don't know, I wanted to see how they really react under the, the green light.
Yeah, I feel like, so once again, I started with the newest, but then I was like, I kind of want to see how we get here.
Yeah, the one I wanted to find, but I couldn't really find it. I couldn't find any Dragon Gate stuff.
Oh, I couldn't either. That was one that kind of tripped me up.
Yeah.
They did have a lot early on. All right, let's go to it. What Young Bucks matches did you watch?
Okay, like I said, I also started with the Jurassic Express because we were gone, so I wanted to catch up. There was a Steen Errico match, or Steen and Generico, a Briscoes, another Steen and Generico, Rich Swann and Ricochet, the PWG. This was a whole DDT tournament once. That there was Swan and Ricochet, then Elgin and Cage the next round, and then Steven Generico in the finals. Then another PWG with a straight up just them versus Seidel and Ricochet. One of those, one of Seidel and Ricochet in New Japan, a Riddle and Cobb in PWG, an Omega and Ibushi in New Japan, a Rowan Hansen in PWG, a Dojo Bros in PWG, the Omega and Pac one they had at AEW Revolution. And then I went, I also forgot, yeah, I digged into the Generation Me on Impact stuff. So I had a Motor City Machine Guns one and a 3D one as well.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. We did. And I thought of it as I was watching things. I was like, I'm going to watch some wacky stuff just because a lot of these weeks recently, we've just been like, oh, we watch the exact same matches because those are the ones we all have access to. And, you know, or that's their entire run, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to what you were going to do because you have a little more access to other things. And I just figured, yeah, you might. There's just so much to choose. I'm sure there'd be some overlapping, but not a ton.
So I once again, I watched the Jurassic Express. I also dug into a dark match with Avalon and Cutler. I watched Steen Erico. So for mine, I haven't been doing it, but for this one, I definitely did it. I put like the company and the year. So I did Steen Erico, which is pretty much their first Ring of Honor match, or at least the first one I could find from early 09. Against Steen Erico. Then I did Motor City Machine Guns from TNA when they were Generation Me. Then I watched a Bravado Brothers match from Ring of Honor in 2011. Then I watched them against Frightmare and Hollow Wicked from Chikara in 2013. Watched them against ACH and Ishimori from New Japan in 2016. I watched them against the Best Friends from Ring of Honor in 2018. And then I watched, I don't usually do six-mans, but the one was them and AJ against Beretta, Rocky and Okada from Ring of Honor as well.
Okay, yeah, and see, I also see you did the same thing I did. I forgot the other caveat I made was I wasn't going to watch anything I did. I was in.
Oh, if I could have found that Cheech and Cloudy, the early one, the HD Net one, I was watching it, but I couldn't find it.
Oh, I have it on my computer. I saved it somewhere somehow along the way. But yeah, I was like, nah, I already know, and I was like, it'll just be weird and whatever. So yeah, I didn't really delve into those.
Honor Club is yet to get the HD Net stuff up and running, but when they do, oh, I will watch.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, it was on TV, wasn't it? I thought maybe it was just a house show, but yeah, I guess it was a TV. I don't know.
That's an HD Net. So, all right. Whew. What do you think the earliest Bucks you even watched was?
Probably an older PWG.
Yeah.
Yeah, because luckily, most of those PWGs were ones that I had just still on my computer from God knows when.
So even like looking at their cage match, their first stuff at all that's really like listed is from 2016. I know they started in 2004 or 2006. I know they started in 2004, but you know. They didn't really start making their way even to the Cali scene, or at least not where Cage Match could find it, until like 2006-ish.
Yep.
Then there's some of that PWG stuff and the random Cali promotions, and then they start doing. Did they start doing Dragon Gate before they even started doing Ring of Honor?
Yes, indeed. What happened was, let me see if I remember my timelines right. I think some Dragon, like Seaman, a couple guys went over to PWG and saw them when they were still in like the orange leopard skin stuff. Then they went over to Japan in, yeah, Dragon Gate had to be like 07, 08, because I remember, or even 09, because I remember in 2010, me and Cloudy saw them at, what was it, 16 Karat in Germany, and they were like, oh my god, we were talking about how we were on the road, we were in Europe for like a month, and they were like, oh, our first tour of Japan not too long ago in Dragon Gate, they were stuck for a little over a month. And then, yeah, I think that was their hugest thing that people don't give enough credit to, was like in their formative years, they went to Dragon Gate before all the stuff broke, so they got used to that style. So by the time they came back to America, nobody was going as fast as Dragon Gate guys went. So they just totally went buckshot. and crazy. I remember, more so than Cloudy, I saw the tea leaves and was like, these guys are getting back from Dragon Gate. They've got a couple bookings on the East Coast. And I remember just being like, son of a bitch, they're going to beat me and Cloudy to be in like the next fast-paced babyface team to break out. Like, I was always hoping. And then like, I saw them coming a mile away. I was like, crap, they're about to break. And then they broke, and I was like, oh, me and Cloudy on the back burner.
Dude, the match I watched from 2009 against Dean Erico is bananas at how fast they move.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. When they come back from Dragon Gate, they can do just about anything and at a million miles an hour. So, yeah, they're just – well – one of their greatest attributes is their pacing and their ability to fire it up and fire it down and fire it up and fire it down whenever they want.
In 2009, there was no firing down. It was only up. They were the fastest two people on the planet.
Yeah, no, especially Nick. But yeah, they were just, yeah, like I said, man, Dragon Gate was the biggest thing that happened to them, hands down. Like, people were like, oh, they went to New Japan, became Bullet Club, yada, yada, yada. But their style that got them to New Japan and around the world, they totally got from busting their butts in Dragon Gate for, I think it was a year or two.
One of the first things, though, that I notice about them is that there may be no better team at timing the little things, like double boot to the gut, double Irish whip, you know, like those little things, they're almost mirror images of each other.
Okay, yeah, I agree. We both agree it's their pacing. You like it when they slow it down. I like it when they're able to speed it up.
Man, I don't necessarily like it when they slow it down. I just, you know. I appreciate it. They let the moment sit a little more. They weren't like a single thing sit in that Cenerico match. At one point, Nick Jackson runs in for a hot tag, clotheslines El Generico, and almost in one step has springboarded up and drop kicked Kevin Steen off the apron. I was like, I don't even know how, like, that was, it's, I blinked and it was done. The deed was done.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They have the ability to go from 0 to 60 faster than any team possible, and not just necessarily by how fast they're going. It's the moves they're doing. You know what I mean? It's a combination of both.
Yeah, they're like you said earlier. They have this ability to literally do anything, and that helps.
Yeah, and then their ability to also do it at any speed. Like, that was the one thing I watched, the Generation Me versus 3D match. It was basically a squash match, and it was them, but they had no problem doing, you know, wrestling in second gear like it was an old Superstars taping, you know what I mean? When it was time to go, they hit their high-fly stuff. They got their one big, oh my God, they almost had them, and then bing, bang, boom, right into a 3D. So, like, it's impressive that they can go both. Which is tough. You know what I mean? There are plenty of guys I watch who try and get to Dragon Gate speed, and once they do, they never go back. I always wanted to get to Dragon Gate speed, but also be able to do Memphis speed.
Sure, sure. And the Bucks do that, you know? But they've gained the ability to do that. I don't think that's something they necessarily started with, because in some of the like the Generation Me match I watched where they wrestled the Motor City Machine Guns in 2010.
Yes.
It didn't feel like they were comfortable in control. You know, they were comfortable when they were moving, but when they just had to sit on a guy, I was like, oh, they look like they're a little less sure of themselves and of what to do here.
Okay, but see, here's the thing. When I do agree, but I didn't look at that match for them slowing it down. Like, what I enjoyed about that match was them out Motor City Machine Gunning the Motor City Machine Guns. So, like, maybe I was just turned a blind eye to it because I was just like, oh, look at them. It was weird. You got to think at the time, it was weird to see the Machine Guns getting out Machine Gunned. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, definitely. When it didn't seem like they were getting ready to double team, like, I remember at one point, like, Nick throws a chin lock on, and I was like, he looks so uncomfortable just putting a chin lock on, you know, like, wants to go, wants to keep moving, but is slowing it down right now, and it just wasn't the most comfortable for them. You know, that they and that was 2010. I watched that Frightmare and Hollow Wicked match from 2013, and they seemed perfectly comfortable with it. So, you know, like, they learned, they adapted.
Oh, I was gonna say, because they definitely, when they went full on heel, or I guess Mount Rushmore era of PWG, they had no problem at all slowing it down, especially for the crazy rabid PWG fans. They had them in the palm of their hands, but they definitely had no problem slowing it down and even putting on a chin lock. You know what I mean? So they definitely evolved.
Yeah, no. I don't know if this is necessarily a knock that people have on the Bucks, but I feel like there is this perception that the Young Bucks are just this like flashy whatever team without any substance, that they just throw 100 super kicks. But they're a team that has evolved over time to become what you currently see.
Oh, absolutely. All right, I'll get to this argument now, because I mean, we're already into it. Let's get to it. One of the things I was wondering your opinion on, I think they're better as good guys, but the business needs them to be bad guys.
Yeah, I could, I guess I could agree with that. I think when I watch them, especially like, you know, in the last 5 years when they're really hitting their stride, I don't think they need... They're a team that doesn't need to be either. They just need to be themselves. And I think they're at their best when they're... Because they're like... They're outsiders cool, man. They're They have that level of cool and confidence about them. So they just go into these matches. I think those are some of my favorites, where they're kind of almost playing the heel role, but people are just going bananas for it.
Oh, no, totally. I agree. And like, that is when they do their best work, is when they're basically just gray. But I'm just saying, part of me was thinking, watching some of their early babyface stuff, like in an ideal world, like, okay, like if they were in 1986 or 89, they'd be the Rockers as opposed to having to be Tully and Arn. You know what I mean? I feel like if they were in WWE in a stacked division, their best role to play would be high-flying baby faces. But they're just so much better than everyone else going out there right now. They need to be the bad guys who are in charge and set up the pacing and all those things. But I just feel like, you know what I mean? Like, at their best, they're probably just, you know, two white meat baby faces who have great moves. Yes, it's great they evolved into the heels they are, but I just think, you know, if they were in a tag division with teams equally as good as they were, but, you know, maybe different shapes and sizes and stuff, that their best role would be, you know, the young flying baby faces.
I agree. But I think they would be that currently, but the current way of wrestling with the internet and all of that, and how they are basically the faces of and the ones who started AEW, like, I think all of those guys are in that same ish position where pushing themselves and putting themselves in the position that actually probably works best for them doesn't work right off the get, because everyone's going to shit on it. So they're curveballing their way into getting into the roles that they eventually know they're going to be in.
Yeah, I don't know. Just part
of
it.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's just my heart was seeing, like, when I watched them in the Riddle versus Cobb match, just getting thrown around by bigger guys. You know what I mean? It's one thing to see them dominant in junior heavyweight matches, but when they're in there with big guys getting thrown around, and like, boy, oh my God, one of the Dojo Bro matches, heck, all of them, I didn't get to see that many, but all the ones I've seen in my life, man, they have no problem taking an ass whooping, you know what I mean? Like, you look at them and they're, you know, two good Christian boys, but for the sake of wrestling, like, even in the matches with the craziness, they don't mind hitting you with a garbage can if they're going to get hit with a garbage can. They don't mind taking a 450 through a table because they'll give you a 450 through a table. And, like, they'll literally get chopped to ribbons by Eddie and Roddy and, you know, because that's what they should do in the match until they sneakily get a chance to super kick you and roll you up and be the bad guys. Like, it's just I'm surprised that they're not stingy almost. You know what I mean? Or hold back.
Yeah, no, for sure. But like, as far as like their current, definitely the current iteration of them with where they are basically almost straight up heels. I like it a lot. And I think it lends itself to better storytelling, at least on their end. Like you were saying, they can kind of lead now and control the pacing and control the match a bit better in this role. And it has led to some, I like the story in the Jurassic Express match and the Avalon and Cutler one, which is a little wacky, but it was still fun storytelling.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, the world needs them to be the leaders because they're so good at storytelling. But I almost, you know, I just, part of me wishes, you know, they were just working big guys and flying around and basically just being like the new Rockers almost.
Well, in my opinion, I think it's all going to get there. I think they have to do this to get back to that.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, yes, they will evolve eventually. And yeah, one day they'll get back to being the lovable baby faces going crazy that they are. But yeah, I mean, but that's, yeah, once again, I'm just thinking in an ideal world. But yeah, in the world we currently have, yes, they are best suited to be the men calling all the shots and being in charge of the match. And that's usually the bad guy.
Yeah, they, one thing they never lacked was moves, though.
Oh my god, that, yeah, yeah. One of their strongest suit is that their bag of tricks is deeper than anybody else's bag of tricks. So they're never at a loss, you know what I mean?
No, never. And that goes all the way from the start up until now. Like, there's no match I watch where, like, they have something for everything.
Yeah, well, okay, let's also go back. They were two kids who grew up with a ring in their backyard. So yeah, they've been having tag offense since junior high, probably.
I love, they just have like, and seamless transitions into tag moves, and they're great at attacking both guys quickly. You know, like, people give shit about like, whoa, they're only supposed to be in there together 5 seconds. The Bucks are pretty damn good at it.
Yeah, no, that's the one thing. Is that they have a ton of moves, they're able to pace the moves, but what's really good is when they pace them at a frenetic pace, like their ability to exactly take out two guys in under 5 seconds.
Yeah, they can click, click, and sometimes you don't even know they're going at that second guy, and it's bam, boom, and it's under 5 seconds.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. You don't expect it, but because they're so deep with their knowledge of moves, they're able to go, oh, this guy's in this position, we got that. Oh, he's in that position, we got this. Oh, he's on the apron, we got one for that. Oh, he's in the ring, okay. Oh, he's on the floor, let's dive on him. You know what I mean? They're never at a loss for anything.
No. I think you said it best, that nobody's bag of tricks is deeper than the Young Bucks. And it's been that way since day one.
Yes, but what I find so fascinating about it is the ability to almost metronome it. Like, they could either go a boom, 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 or boom, 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 boom. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the super kick thing got a little overblown. Like, because now when people think of the Young Bucks, they just think they're going to throw 100 super kicks. Most matches I watched, they might have thrown one or two super kicks.
No, it's true. And that was another genius thing about their offense, is they had a million moves. So for the most part, you didn't know what was coming next. But they also had, you know, the Misawa forearm, where they're going to hit a million of them, but one of them may be the knockout, one of them may not. You may be able to use it willy-nilly. You may be able to use it as a finish. Like, that was just an extra wrinkle that just must have made their match calling and just having the ability to just at any second just lift their leg and be able to take someone out in either the end of the match or the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. They really have evolved through some interesting era. I mean, we've covered a lot of teams. The Young Bucks may have the largest like body of largest accessible body of work.
Yeah, and other than, let's say, you know, like Demolition, which, yeah, technically are still teaming somewhere, they probably have the longest teaming. Yeah, you know I mean, like, I guarantee they teamed way longer than the Hart Foundation.
Sure. And like I said, probably you could just... And it's always been, like, 2009, they were doing Ring of Honor stuff. And now... 2020, they're still on our TV sets, and they're, you know, there's not like there's a point where we were like, oh yeah, that Nick Jackson solo run was great. No, it's been 11 years of them together on our TV screens running hot.
Yep. Nope. Definitely. Oh yeah, definitely on the TV. I was gonna say I did get to see them wrestle each other once, and that was pretty awesome. But so technically that was a singles match. But yeah, no, they made a concerted effort that they're like, no, we are a tag team, and obviously we can appreciate that.
So, and I've definitely heard this before, and I already know that you're gonna poo poo it down just like I do, but in watching their TNA stuff. TNA dropped the ball. They had the Young Bucks, and it's like, yeah, they had 2010 Young Bucks, 2011 Young Bucks. I mean, sure, you can see the talent is there, but they definitely weren't the most TV ready team I ever saw in my life in 2010.
No, they didn't have the swagger yet. You know what I mean? Like, as you see them, I think it was especially in New Japan where they were just able to say whatever crazy stuff they wanted, that they were like, hey, we could just be crazy and wacky. And then especially like a lot of their PWG stuff. One of the matches, Nick's got some wacky, I don't know. It's one of those noisemaker gimmicks, but it also has a laser pointer. But he thought it was the coolest thing and stops the whole crowd and show. For them to hear this little, it's like the size of his phone, and it makes, and like you couldn't hear it. And like on commentary, like we told him he should have brought a microphone. This is so dumb. And then he used the laser pointer to line the baby face and then go back to cutting him off. But like the fact that they had such balls in front of the most rabid crowd at the time, PWG and the Mecca of Reseda, to be like, everyone stop. I've got this dumb idea. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that they grew their balls and, you know, went nuts and said, screw it. Like, yes, we are the work rate team, but now we're going to go be the crazy characters. And then it just worked. You know what I mean? But I agree. They did not have that in 2010 in TNA Impact.
Right. No, I mean, for sure. They're definitely a talented team, but they just didn't have. Yeah, they didn't have all that. They needed to leave. But I've definitely heard people mention how, well, Impact 1.0 had the Young Bucks. They made them some wacky team, and then they didn't even keep them around. It's like, okay, dudes, like, get out of here. Hindsight is 2020. They needed to leave there, do a bunch of Ring of Honor, New Japan, you know. They needed to go wild on the indies. When you look at their cage match, the schedule they were running some of those years is bananas.
Oh, yeah. I would assume it's after one of the releases. I believe it's the TNA one where, yeah, like every weekend they were somewhere. And then once something with ROH, there was a time there where they were there but weren't signed or something. They had a schedule. Or then especially when the Bullet Club stuff got going, they were in friggin' England every other weekend. Yeah, they went crazy for like a three-four-year clip.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because it's not just like, oh, they were in Japan for a month and then they came back to the States and did some. They went back to Japan. They were like, okay, we're in Japan for 2 weeks. We're going to fly to England and then we're going to go to Ireland and then we're going to go to Germany and then we're going to come to the States for 2 weeks. Then we're back in Japan for a week. Then we're back in the States. Then we're going to go back over to England. Then we have a tour of Australia. And it's like, what in the world?
Yeah, they were straight up a rock band.
Yeah. Yeah, they worked hard, and they worked harder than anybody. Like, look at these matches. I can't say I've ever seen a Young Bucks match where they are taking a night off.
Yeah, no, because that's the problem. They're going everywhere, so everyone, they're almost like the old NWA champion comes into town, and you throw your best at them. So, yeah, these guys, everywhere they went, they had whoever was the local best or, you know, that country's best or that nation's best or that continent for Lord knows because, where you know, they were everywhere.
Yeah, and even in, like, ha-ha-ish comedy matches. Because I did watch, and this is before we chose the Young Bucks, but I watched a Chikara match where they wrestled a Thunder Frog and a tree. Some guy who's a tree.
Okay.
And even in that, they're taking huge bumps and like flip-flop flying all over the ring. And I was like, holy smokes, man. Like, and it was a tournament. They had to wrestle like a bunch more times that weekend. But in this opener, they were like flip-flop flying for a tree and a frog and taking crazy bumps and doing big spots. And I was like, man, these dudes just don't quit.
It's Chikara. It does that to you. I once broke my toe wrestling a chipmunk.
You mean CP Monk?
Yes, that guy.
Wow. Impressive.
Yeah, so it's something about, you know, anthropomorphized animals battling. You know, you get a little crazy, you take some crazy bumps.
Yeah. And another thing, and they had to have gotten this from Hiro and Claudio, because Hiro and Claudio are the best at it, but the comedy of errors spots, they were incredible at it.
Oh yeah, yeah. The 15%, as Excalibur always says, they're 85% awesome, but there's 15% where they always mess up. And honestly, part of me just thinks that was just the construct of, crap, we're on the road every night. What's something safe that we could do? Okay, we got to come up with our own shtick to, you know, preserve ourselves as much as they can, being on such an insane schedule.
But they do it really well, and even when they're supposed to be baby faces or in the baby face role, they can hit each other, and it doesn't make them look bad or silly, and they never, like, put it over like, oh, you hit me, or it never, like, slows the pace. It's always, like, a real quick pop, pop, pop.
Yeah, no, they're smart with it, obviously. I mean, look at how good they are.
yeah, super smart. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what else to say about him. I just, in this exercise, I like how, you know, I did start with the newest, and I was going to just be like, I'll just watch all over. But I was like, no, one of my favorite things about doing this is watching the evolution of a tag team, watching them come into the, you know, their skin as a team and get to the point where we're talking about them now, you know?
Yeah, it's great to see the evolution. It was tough because, I mean, we didn't go too far back because, you know what I mean? But once they hit, you know what I mean, they were everywhere. Like we said, once they came back from Dragon Gate, they were on everybody's radar and everyone knew, and it was quick before they were in TNA, then ROH, and up, 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 up. And now look at it. They got so good, they got their own promotion basically out of it. It's crazy.
Yeah, insane. But that being said, they weren't just TNA, Ring of Honor, New Japan. They were literally everywhere. And a lot of times, more than that, just everywhere that you could have eyes on them. If you could have eyes on them, the Young Bucks were there.
Oh, no. Let's put it this way. Their schedule was so ridiculous. They had clothes in Hot Topic when they were just before AEW.
Yeah.
That used to blow my mind. Like, yeah, some people would understand, but I was like, that's crazy. That it was like, oh, we're unsigned. Yeah, we're super popular globally, but like they were an unsigned band, basically. They were just going around doing everything, and like they caught the eye of Hot Topic. You know what I mean? Like, any Joe Schmo in a mall could go pick up a Young Buck shirt. That's crazy.
Yeah, and people did. They had Funko Pops. They were like, WWE barely had Funko Pops, but you could buy a Funko Pop set of the Young Bucks.
Yeah, they were so good. They were licensable.
Yeah. Yeah. They were, and not for nothing. I watched that Jurassic Express match. Still are. They, like, have not missed a beat. It, like, and this new layer to their game of being like almost grimy, angry heels. I'm like, oh, awesome. Like another layer to their already being awesome. Yep. I am here for it.
Here's a layer I also wanted to bring up that I realized in their, it's weird because I feel like all their matches are kind of big, but like in their big matches, like, their ability not only to have a great wrestling match, but if you notice, it's usually with their buddies, like Kenny Omega is usually in there. Maybe it's just all three of them have this thing. But they always had an extra layer of story. Like in the match of them versus Omega and Ibushi, like, yes, they're doing all this crazy wrestling stuff. But sure, in every like third of the match, there's also the story of Kenny's kind of concerned because he is still best friends with them, the Young Bucks. But the Young Bucks are also kind of concerned because now he's with his best friend Ibushi. Like, there's still always time for them to be like, well, let's take a pause and tell that story. Same thing with the Omega Page match, where everybody says it's like 9 gajillion stars that they had, or the best tag match ever, or at least in the last decade, or however they want to make it. Same thing. In there, they had plenty of high spots, but there was still the story of all four were in the Elite. Like, the beginning of the match was the, oh, we know each other's moves, let's tell that story. Then they went into the craziness and, no, I actually don't like you a little bit. Then they told that story. Then, you know what I mean? Like, their ability in their big matches to add this whole extra wrinkle of storytelling on top of the fact that they can do all the moves, I feel like is what's been the icing on their cake for at least the last 2 years.
Yeah, and the two recent AEW matches that I watched were primarily storytelling. You know, that Jurassic Express match was a lot of storytelling. That the Avalon and Cutler match watch was a lot of storytelling. But they tell a cool story, and then they sprinkle out some tricks out of their bag, and it's like, you know, bang. Okay.
Part of me is like, yes, they deserve this praise heaped upon them. But part of me is like wondering just now, or were they just on such a frenetic schedule of matches that they were like, all right, I'm beyond the spots, whatever. Yeah, we can do those. Now we're just bored and we're all about this whole new thing. Let's get into the storytelling. And we want to praise it as this genius idea and this thing that they had, where I was like, maybe they just got really bored and were on all these matches day after day after day. And we're like, hey, let's just start doing storytelling. That's more fun.
Maybe. I don't know. I
know. But
I just know I enjoy it.
It's highly enjoyable. It takes their matches to a whole other snowflake level. They're above five of them now. Like, they broke the scale. So, like, yeah, I'm all for it, but it's just a weird mind experiment of like, oh, yeah, man, they're really pushing the envelope as far as storytelling and this and that. It's like, or maybe they were just bored and now all they care about is the storytelling part. Who knows?
I had another thing I wanted to hit on, but I'd rather talk about this. I watched them do a main event with the best friends in 2018, and they go a half hour. And at one point, Trent Barretta is smoking a cigarette for 2 minutes while wrestling.
Yeah. You got a problem with that? You got a problem with that?
The spot continued to evolve. And I was like, he's still got it in his mouth. And it's lit. And he's like, he's got his mouth closed, just like pursing smoke through his lips while keeping his mouth closed while taking hip tosses with a cigarette and with a lit cigarette in his mouth.
Yeah, I see nothing wrong with this.
If anybody out there gets a chance, look up, it's like a show in North Carolina in 2018. The main event is the Young Bucks against the Best Friends, and Trent Barretta and Chuck Taylor put sunglasses on and smoke a cigarette mid-match. And I was dumbfounded.
Oh, wait, time out. Had you not seen that before?
They literally smoke a cigarette? No, I've never seen them literally smoke a cigarette.
Yeah. They went into this weird, I forget what it was. It was dirtbag thing, but not really. Yeah, they would wear the sunglasses, they'd smoke a cigarette, and they suddenly didn't have a care in the world.
Whew. It was
It was a phase, yes.
It was wild. But in that match, great storytelling.
Of course. See, that's the thing. I feel like that just became their new thing. They were like, we can do all the super kicks, but here's the new thing.
All right. So we've just talked a lot about a lot of things they do well. Pull it down into one pot here. What makes the Young Bucks great?
The biggest thing I would have to say is the bag of tricks and their ability and the way they let him out of the bag. You know what I mean? like I said, they could either let them out boom, 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 real easy, come as they go, or they can just slam you over the head with move, 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 move. And especially in those PWG crowds in that era where that's all they wanted, man, they'd get them frothing at the mouth almost. And hell, screw it, not even PWG. Around the world they were doing that because they were the only ones who could do it that well. So when you're the best at the world at that, that's what makes you great.
Yeah, I mean, I did some Ring of Honor when they were at like their super kick peak. And those crowds were, at times, it felt like the crowd was just waiting for Young Bucks, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they were excited to see wrestling, but they, like, they needed the Young Bucks. They were just waiting to give all their energy to the Young Bucks. But, yeah, I think what made the Young Bucks great is this, like I said earlier, they were outsiders cool. But they had, like, the flashy daredevil stuff of, like, I guess, I mean, better than the Hardys, but, like, what people enjoyed about the Hardys. They took things that were great about all these other teams and made these other teams special and just combined them into this one wacky package that is the Young Bucks. And it's, I mean, yeah, it's crazy to see now where it's gotten.
Yeah, and speaking of the greatness, and like, once again, they get compared, and I was thinking about updating my opinion, because I think I said it when we discussed the Midnight Express and them and their comparison with the Young Bucks. In doing the deep dive in the Young Bucks, I agree it's an accurate comparison, because it's the closest comparison, because Nick Jackson basically is modern-day Bobby Eaton, but Matt Jackson is also a phenomenal worker. But, like, yeah, he's not Stan Lane, he's not Dennis Condrey, but I feel like that's the closest comparison. So, I mean, if you're the Young Bucks, you're getting compared to the Midnights, who are arguably the greatest tag team, like, you're doing something right. But, yeah, I agree they've created their own niche. You know what I mean? Like, it's, if nothing else, it's just a good comparison.
Yeah, they're interchangeable, but so different.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's very much the same, like, makeup of a team of one guy who just can do everything and one guy who's a phenomenal all-around wrestler and who could also do flashy stuff, too. But, yeah, I just feel like that's the thing. It's because Nick Jackson is so very much like a modern-day Bobby Eaton that you're like, oh, well, then obviously they're Midnights. It's like, eh, Nick and Bobby is accurate. The rest kind of falls apart. But, come on, those just – they both ooze greatness in their own right.
Nick Jackson, maybe the best shine caller in modern era wrestling.
Watching him and Ricochet, like, try and one-up each other with their, like, oh, how many moves can I hit in 5 seconds versus how many moves you can hit in 5 seconds is crazy.
Yeah, it boggles the mind.
Yeah.
So, this question may be a bit easier, though, Cheech.
Get to it.
Because.
Get to it.
The question is always, how would we beat the team that we are speaking of? But if we're going to ask, how would we beat the Young Bucks? We have beaten the Young Bucks.
Exactly. I'd say we just stick to the plan.
when we wrestled the Young Bucks at AIW, we were kind of fresh as a team. What is it, 2015?
Yeah, dude. Freshy fresh.
Yeah, so we, while me and Cheech are both tag team wrestlers and have been tag team wrestlers forever, we as a team were very new together, so we didn't have a whole lot of, our bag of tricks was real, real short. We were making it up as we went along, and we still caught a W over those Young Bucks, so, but I don't think that same plan would work part two.
No, but the same reason would apply. Like we said, those two are rock stars. They're busy traveling around the world, wrestling every day. They don't know us. We know them. You know what I mean? Like, they're too busy to know what we're doing. We're plenty not busy enough to be able, like we said, as soon as we got back from Indianapolis, we had plenty of time to sit down and watch All Out. You know what I mean? So we know them way better than they know us. And that's what worked for us last time and will work with us again. obviously now we come a lot closer to matching them in firepower. So that only plays in our hand. But once again, the unknown is just – our unknown is too powerful for them. I'm sorry. I'll say it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Because
we the best.
It's true. They don't know us. They don't know our bag of tricks. We know their bag of tricks. We know there's going to be a Meltzer driver, more bang for your buck. We know there's probably going to be not one, two, but many super kicks. They don't know nothing about Bomba Bomb. They don't know nothing about the Doom and Gloom.
I don't even think we had Lincoln Log in the tricks back then, did we?
I think that's all we had.
Oh. All right. Yeah, so we beat him before and we'll beat him again.
Yeah, I agree.
December, whatever the date is, 2CW reunion show. Young Bucks, you bring those titles because they belong to us.
Yeah, bring them back. Return them to their owners.
Yeah, even if you got to FedEx them. But I prefer you bring them so we can beat you for them.
In person.
Live in living color. All right, that was the tag team of the decade named by the Wrestling Observer, the Young Bucks.
Yeah, and I think what we've proven is they most definitely deserve that moniker. They are tag team of the decade, hands down.
Yeah, for sure. There are so many times when watching where I was just, you know, it's crazy because you just expect them to be so good at this point, you know?
And it's just like, look at the guys that we're talking about them wrestling. We're talking about Matt Riddle, Jeff Cobb, Kenny Omega. We're talking about Alex Shelley. We're talking about the Briscoes. We're talking about Kevin Steen, El Generico. You know what I mean? Not only were they a great team, they were a great team when they were lined up against other great teams and other great wrestlers. You know what I mean? Look at all those guys who were all signed somewhere.
Yeah, man. Wild. Wild. And they're still rolling, man, and they can still roll for another decade.
Oh, my God, yeah. Okay, part of me was wondering, how their transformation will eventually, they'll become the Rock and Roll Express. You know what I mean? Like eventually they're going to be 80 with white hair and being like, nah, bro, we can still throw super kicks and I can do a destroyer.
Everything's different in this wrestling business now, you know, like guys were getting out of the business at 31, 32. Their prime was over. They were already banged up. They couldn't do it no more. Nowadays, it's all different. The game has changed. Those dudes will wrestle into their 40s and they'll still be doing it at a high level for sure. I'd bet money on it.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, once again, for as hard as they go, like the fact that they've preserved themselves so well, their style must be doing something right, because you know what I mean, they haven't had a ton of major injuries.
No, for sure. Yeah, Matt had the back, and I think Nick had some kind of minor injury that put him down for a blink.
Once again, another sign of a great tag team: longevity and be able to do it without getting all banged up.
Your best ability is availability. All right. Another one in the can, another team down. If you got a team that you think that we should talk about here on the podcast, hit us up on Twitter at DreamWorkPod, or you can hit up Cheech at New Wave Cheech, or me, I'm on Twitter at Extremely Cute. So, thanks everybody again for listening. This is DreamWork. For Colin, I'm Cheech. What?
Adios.